Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
My mindset then was like, that don't matter to me. I'm still trying to, I need to get to the league. Like, that's where,
right?
You know, I'll feel like I did something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like, I look back on it now and I'm just like, man, I wish I would have just enjoyed it and a little bit more. But I look at it like, that's just what made me the killer that I wanted to be.
Welcome to 94 and More, a podcast presented by Bristol Studio. I'm your host, Jake Fenster, and I'm joined by my co-host, Vic Law.
What's good?
Our guest today is Orlando Johnson. Orlando, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Thanks. Glad to be here, man.
I know that Vic shared with me a little bit of information that you were in quarantine in Australia, mm-hmm. and you actually tested positive for the virus. So how are you feeling?
Oh, man, I feel fine. It's crazy because before I took off from America, I took a test to make sure everything was good. I was negative. Mm-hmm. I get here and, after the day two, they take another test. I come back negative and it gets to around day 10 for me and they take another test and they tell me it's positive. And, I was like, how does this happen? They're calling me have you been around anybody? Like, ain't nobody can come in my room.
Yeah, it's almost crazy that they ask that question anyway.
Yeah, so I'm just like, I don't understand how the whole...
Did they test you again once you tested positive? Did you get another test that confirmed it?
They just moved me to another hotel and basically just said, after 14 days of your quarantine, you should be good to go. So that was that. And
got you.
Kind of just I tried to, fight it. I'm like, yo, can we take another test? It doesn't make sense. They asked me, do you feel any symptoms, anything like that? I'm like, nah, I don't feel anything. And
that's so crazy.
That's where I'm at today, man.
Thanks. Thanks for jumping on with us during that time. And I know it's pretty crazy to be going through that, but we really appreciate you. For those people listening who maybe aren't familiar with you, do you want to give a little bit of background maybe about who you are and kind of what your journey has been like up until this point?
Oh, yeah. I'm Orlando Johnson from Seaside, California. I went to UC Santa Barbara from 2009 to 2012, was drafted in the 2012 draft, second round pick, 3 years. In the NBA, two with the Pacers, and then bounced around to the Kings, the Suns, and the Pelicans. Been overseas, the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Played in Russia, China, Philippines.
There's a lot of bouncing around.
Here in Australia.
Yeah.
So I've got a chance to see a lot of the world, which I'm truly blessed and thankful for. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, ruptured my patella tendon, a summer pickup game. And, bounced back from that, made my way to Taiwan and then to Russia. And now I'm here and finally back all the way, healthy to where, I felt coming out in the draft and my early, 20 years. So, I'm ready to return to form and get this thing rocking with Vic here in Brisbane.
I want to go back to what it was like for you kind of growing up in California. I know you bounced around a lot, but you kind of walk us mm-hmm. through what your experience was like growing up here. And I'm also from California, so I'd be curious to get mm-hmm. your take on what it was like. If you could share some more information there.
Yeah, well, for me, I grew up in a small town, right? So it was only 30,000 people. And then, the next biggest city was San Jose, the Bay Area. Growing up, I seen, a lot of different things. You come in to... my hometown or whatever, and you see all this, it was some good talent, right? And I'm just taking it to what I do as a basketball player. So we're like, oh, there's some ballers here. But then you drive up, 45 minutes to an hour, and then you see all the different talent, and you're like, oh man, it's different out here. The culture is different out here. There's a lot more. So mm-hmm. for me, it being from a small city like that just having to kind of grind my way out of there to get noticed and to get put on. It was literally like a grind every day because my brother, the one that put the ball in my hand, he was, you know, one of the only few basketball players that like received like a Division I scholarship out of that area during his time. And so, you know, just
so he set the blueprint for you and kind of showed you the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he set the tone. He set the tone for me, just kind of showed me what I needed to do. And for me, I fell in love with that process, fell in love with the game. And I wanted to take it further than what he did because, you know, growing up, he was my hero and he was my favorite player. You know, even though I didn't watch as much of him, the highlights that I seen, I would always tell people, I was like, that's my Jordan. So, you know, so like just going through those times right there and learning, being, you know, a much younger brother, because my brother's 17 years older than me. Damn near could have been like my father, you know, how he was raising me and stuff like that. So just having that experience and growing up in a big family home, my grandmother took us all in. You know, at one point it was 17 of us living in a household in like a 4-bedroom house.
How did you make that work?
Like, well, you know, for us it was, you know, we had, you know, a little den area like where people would sleep. We had guys on the couches. They had triple bunk beds. You know, we just had to make it, you know, work by any means. That's how our grandma, you know, raised us, and you just kind of told us, like, you know, ain't nothing gonna be handed to you unless you want to go out there and go get it. For me, it was a no brainer. You know, seeing that, like, I love my family, I love them to death, but you know, I just always wanted to provide a better life. You know, but those memories are the ones that keep me going and keep me striving for more. Because yeah, I remember sharing a bed with my cousins, and there'd be three of us in there. And
Orlando, like the culture, you know, obviously that you said you have a very tight knit family. What does sports kind of mean to that family? Like you say, your brother, you know, kind of put the ball in your hand, but was it always basketball? Uh-huh. Did you play any other sports? How did sports really tie into your family dynamic?
Oh man, so it was like it damn near was like, if you ain't gonna work, you better be playing a sport or doing something, you know. And for me, I was like, well, dude, I do love to be outside and I love, you know, competing. Like that was my thing. And so I had to play everything growing up. I played baseball, football, track, and basketball, of course. But football has always been my favorite sport. Still love it to this day. Love watching the game. You know, I think, and that was my other brother, Jamel, his favorite sport. Like he was a football player. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me, my grandma just got a joy from putting us all in different sports, you know. So it'd be, like I said, all my cousins and stuff like that were playing on different, you know, peewee teams and, you know, Boys and Girls Club teams and stuff like that. So, you know, we grew up in a household where we're going to compete anyway, you know. So it was just kind of like bred it in us, like to want to go play and compete and try different things. And so for me, like basketball and football were the ones that stuck out the most to me. I hated baseball because how slow it was. And, you know, like, and literally because I was weak. I ain't gonna front. I was weak at baseball. Like they'd be pitching the ball and I'm like, man, I can't. I would like try to go up there to get hit.
Right. So, like,
think, like, it's coming.
Just get on base.
Too fast. Yeah, let me get on base. You know what I mean? And, you know, I was good, like, in the outfield, but, like, they rarely hit it out there. So I'd be, like, the kid, like, staring off in the clouds. Like,
yeah, definitely.
Like, yo, yeah, it wasn't.
That's
it
like
wasn't
every kid.
For me. Yeah, so it's like, man, I don't want to do this no more. And I know that probably made my grandma kind of sad because she loved baseball. But, you know, I found, you know, love for football because I was a quarterback growing up, played a little receiver as well. You know, a lot of offers for football. Basketball kind of gave me more of a challenge, more of a thrill in terms of nobody really, everybody kind of thought like the easier way was football. But I just felt like I wanted to, you know, change that narrative and bet on myself and see what
That's an interesting point. When you say that, what do you mean it was the people thought that was the easier way was football? It just came more naturally to you?
Yeah, I was more naturally just like gifted at football, like physically. You know, I always loved the contact. You know, then they see me like I think they just seen the potential of what, you know, I could be. Like, they seen I did play, you know, quarterback growing up from, you know, the early years to my high school years. And then my last year when I, or my junior year when I transferred to a different school, they ended up putting me at receiver. You know, I played well, but I didn't really like that because of, like, I get here and y'all just switch my position. Like, I was a quarterback growing up. Y'all knew what I was. And then, but I got a lot of, you know, looks, you know, Pac-10 look or Pac-12 looks. A lot of high major schools out there that were, you know, trying to recruit me, you know, really thought like football was my way out. For myself, it kind of, my football coach kind of rubbed me the wrong way when he told me I would be like a Division III center. And I just didn't like that. That didn't sit well with me.
Like, a Division III center?
I was like, damn. I was like, am I weak at hoop? I was like, oh man. I was like, so, you know, that summer going into my senior year, I just grinded with my brother, literally all day and all, you know, night for that summer until then I got on the circuit, played against, you know, a lot of the high major guys in my class, like Derrick Rose, OJ Mayo, mm-hmm. you know, Beasley, all those guys.
Isn't OJ from California?
Really well. OJ's not. OJ's from, he's from West Virginia. OJ Mayo. OJ's from West Virginia. So, you know, I got a chance to hold my own and compete against, you know, the best. And I was like, you know what? Showed up literally on the first day of practice. I walked, football practice. I walked up to the coach and all my friends on the team were like, oh, what's up? Where are your pads at? And I was like, hold up. And I just told the coach, I said, look here, man. I got 13 Division I scholarships for basketball. I said, what can you offer me? And he's like, well, you know, you come out here and you play, you know, we can make something happen. I think I said, you know what? That's not good enough for me. I said, I'm going to take my chances with this basketball thing. And I walked off the field. And that was the last time, you know, I know my friends were hurt. They didn't believe that I was actually going to do it. But I just focused that whole year to becoming, you know, the best basketball player I could be at that time. It led to me being, you know, one of the best high school players in California that year in my division and stuff. So, yeah, I think it turned out all right, man.
Do you think
Sorry,
go ahead, Jake.
Oh, go ahead, Vic. Go ahead.
I said, do you think – well, first of all, let's just say everyone in this podcast was a former quarterback at one point in time in their career.
Mm-hmm.
some a little farther than others.
You can't throw a spiral to save your life.
Nah, well, Jake, I've had shoulder surgeries that have just derailed my quarterback career. I would say, do you think if you stayed at quarterback, do you think that would have changed your perspective on whether or not you would wanted to keep playing?
You know what? I think so. I think so because I love that accountability. I love the leadership. And plus, I felt like I was good at it. But mm-hmm. when I switched to the school, like, they were more of a, you know, option team. So they ran it a lot. Mm-hmm. They ran it a lot. And I was more of a drop back and throw it, you know. So they wanted to run. I wanted to pass. And, like, so it kind of – and then, like, you know, when you're playing, you're like, yo, I want the ball.
All right.
So, you know, I go through the year. I look up, and I had 14 catches, but – 7 of them were for touchdowns. So I'm like, I'm not even gonna get the ball like that. And you know, I still made, you know, all league or whatever, but it was just like, nah, like this ain't, I don't want to do this. Like,
right.
And I think the popularity you could get with basketball, like I like that. I like people being able to see me. I remember telling at like a little like banquet at college, they're just like, you know, we heard you were, you know, a hell of a football player. Why'd you switch to basketball? I said, well, you can't really see the football players. They got that face mask on the whole time. I said, I want y'all to be able to see me. Yeah, I don't know, man. It would have been interesting to see how the football thing would have turned out.
Right.
So once you got kind of clear on it and you went to your coach and you asked him, you know, I got all these basketball offers. What do you have for me? And he kind of came back with nothing. What made it clear for you your next step was? Like, how did you then decide what school you were going to go to and kind of what you were looking for in a program?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, during that recruiting process, right, I really, man, the coach that I ended up going to play for at LMU, right, this is the first school I went to before Santa Barbara, Rodney Tension. And, you know, I think just kind of like how he made me feel. Like I didn't have a father growing up, and he kind of like stepped up and was like, "Man, like you come here, man. I'm gonna show you what it takes to become a pro, right?" And he coached, some of all our favorite guards in college at Arizona, Mike Bibby, Gilbert Arenas, Jason Terry, Salim Stoudemire. He coached so many great guards, Andre Iguodala, like all these guys. I'm like, I want to get to that level. What do I got to do? He was like, I'm going to give you a chance, every chance to fail, to succeed, fail and succeed until you get there. That's all I wanted was opportunity. And he believed in me from the jump. I took that visit. I met with the team. I met with the guys. I felt like it was just like the place for me. And I felt like even though our team wasn't very good that year, the year that I played for him, I learned so much through those losses, through, the practices, through him teaching me the game, more on a intellect side than, the physical side, because I think my skills got better as I got older. Just the little things he was teaching me, really set that apart. Gave me the opportunity, like I said, to learn and grow. And it made it an easy choice when I picked him. And I'm glad I did that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it kind of was just clear to you that that was the best way to go. And, I can't, I don't have any experience being recruited for Division I basketball, but I mean, it sounds similar to kind of what Vic had gone through on his own side, kind of going through that process as well.
College, college recruiting, as well as free agency, being a pro is obviously it's a mind game, right? And I think a lot of times, especially when I chose Northwestern, it just felt like the most home place. I don't know how to explain it. Every other program kind of made me feel like I was just going to be another piece in the machine, right? Like it just made me feel like, yeah, you come in here, we're good. Will always be good. You'll help us continue that tradition, blah, blah, blah. We got this, we got this, we got this, right? And nothing ever like stood out with them, right? Like obviously they had all the bells and whistles, but when I went to Northwestern, the coach kind of made me feel like, I've had this experience. I've coached the Olympic team. I can get you there, right? Like I've seen what it takes to get there. And I can tell you, he gave me his understanding. He's like, you're not ready yet, but we can get you ready, and I need you. And I felt like just like that was a big part of like why I wanted to go there, and then continue to prove like other people wrong. Like the school I went to had never had success, really, and we finally got to that. But being like the first person to believe and say like nah, we can get there, was really important for me, and it was a super special moment.
So kind of what you're both saying is it's really a gut feeling. It's not something that you can really put on paper.
Right.
But it's really just from sitting in that room, from hearing all these different people try to sell you on their vision. There's one, there's a moment that comes along during that process where you don't even need to be sold. You feel aligned. You feel that gut. This is it. This is the one.
You're right.
Yep.
Hey, Orlando, let me ask you a question. When did basketball truly become serious for you? Like, I think there's a point in every Hooper's, process or path, like when it goes from you just hooping with your boys and it's fun to then it comes to a point where all right, this shit is serious. Like now I'm playing for something like it's much bigger than just basketball for like a
I remember this moment. So I'm it's my senior year. After my season, I kind of wondered, I was like, man, I miss playing like another sport. So I tried volleyball, right? I'm out there just playing, enjoying it, and it was fun. It was like a great decompressor after a long basketball season that year. And I get back to working out with my brother. I'm kind of just going through the motions, right? He's like getting pissed off at me. He's like, "Yo, what are you doing? What are you talking about, man?" He said, "If you're gonna be out here, like, let's get better." And I was like, "What do you think I'm doing?" And so like he was kind of just like, so I keep going. I'm shooting and going through drills, and he's like just pissed off. So he's like, "You know what? Check up." And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "Yo, like, stop." Like, and so like we play, and my brother, like I said, he was good. He was still like pretty young and still playing. So he was probably like 35 at the time. I'm talking about he wore me out, dog. He wore me out. And I was so mad because he started talking. He's like, you ain't ready for no Division One. You ain't. They about to send you home. They about to send you home. And this, you know, this is before I even take off the head down there. So yeah. I'm pissed. I don't talk to my brother for a few days, right? My brother Robbie and my brother Jamel is just like, he's a mediator because we talk damn near like every day. Mm-hmm. All three of us, we always talk. So he was like wondering, like, yo, like, what's up? Like, what's up with y'all? Like, why ain't y'all talking? He's like, and so my brother, he's a smart ass. So he was like, well, you tell him, you ask him what's wrong. His feelings got hurt. he think he was about to be sweet. And I was like, oh, man. Like, you know, he's like, oh, he's like, what's he saying? He's telling you the truth. And so like, I didn't want to hear that at the time.
Right.
But, you know, right before that, I locked in for, you know, the month and a half that I had, you know, with him there before I went down to school, mm-hmm. went down to school and was like, this is something that I was telling myself at, you know, 17, almost 18 at the time. Like, I'm really going to try to like make it to the NBA. Like, this is what I wanted to do. And then I started speaking on it.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I started telling my best friend, Brandon, and, wait, you going to make it to the league from here? Like, he's like you nice, but like, he's like, but like, I think once he's seen me, like the way, like anybody coming in there, Kobe, James Harden, like all these guys, Russ Westbrook, like I wasn't, you know, wasn't backing down from nobody. Mm-hmm. And I was going at everybody. And it was just like, they were like, yo, who's this dude with the braids, the nappy braids out here, you know, working like this. And it was like, yo, that's our new freshman coming in. And it was like, okay, like, he alright.
Right.
And so then it was just like, I can't believe in like, yo, I can play with them. Mm-hmm. I can play with them. And then as my, you know, my game grew, the notoriety started to, you know, come along. And then I just took off and became, you know, a player that everybody, you know, in the country kind of knew about. So that's just how it went. But like, definitely. Yeah, I would say, bro, like going into that freshman year of college, I really was like, okay, let me tap into something that I've never seen for myself. And mm-hmm. that was the turning point, I think, for me. Because before I loved all the other sports. I liked it.
Speaking on your brother and especially how he mentored you, were there any times in high school or college mm-hmm. when you and your brother, like that connection you guys had really helped you get through any adversity or obstacles you faced?
Oh, yeah. I lost my mother at a year. Our mom at a year. My brother was 17, about to get ready to go to college. My other brother was like 13 or something like that. My brother Robbie, he's the eldest, so he takes off to Weber State, you know, coming back and helping when he can and whatnot. And my brother Jamel was, you know, pivotal because he was just entering high school. So he had to, you know, kind of take care of me. They would tell me stories about them taking me to school with them, to high school with them. Be like, yo, I got to take my brother with me. Like, you know what I mean? They're kids. You know what I mean? I can't even imagine me having to do something like that. Like take my baby brother or my kid and I'm in high school, you know, at the time. So like just having that support system, like having them just be there, you know, having that time with them, you know, a lot of them could have been like, oh man, like, he's cool. He's at grandma's house. He got, you know, his cousins and uncles and aunties there. But like, they really took it upon themselves. Like, nah, like none of us grew up with, you know, with dad. So like, why would we let, you know, our brother who's going to grow up without a mom or a dad? So them having that connection, I think with our mom, like helped them being a little bit more compassionate and looking out for me, for one. To make sure that I didn't go down the wrong path because we had so many family members and friends that did.
Right.
So they just, you know, they took it upon themselves to make sure that they didn't want their brother to turn out that way.
Right. And were they, when you, after your first year at LMU, kind of going back a little bit, when you decided you know, you had a lot of success that year. You set this freshman scoring record and you tied the freshman record for rebounds, but you decided to leave LMU. Did you talk to them about that, how you were feeling, and they kind of helped you figure out your next move?
Yeah. So you know, my coach, I really went there for him. And, you know, when he got fired, that really, that hurt me, because of, the relationship we built. And I just felt like he didn't really get a shot. He was only there 2 years, and yeah, we had a rough year, but you know, when a coach comes in and he has guys that aren't really his guys, and you know, like we're his first recruiting class, it's kind of tough, mm-hmm. you know, because yeah. he's trying to figure out a way to win. Like their job is based on winning games. And he had players that, all honesty, like just didn't belong there. He was the one that, you know, that had to take the fall. And so for me, I was like, I'm not going to be at a school that, you know, that just turns their back on, you know, somebody like that. You know, I made the decision the first one because I took one visit to LMU and that's where I knew I wanted to go. And then next one, my brother's like, nah, like we're going to have a little bit more say in this one. So I wanted to go to Purdue. So Purdue was the first school that called me once I told him I wanted to transfer. Coach Painter, we were talking and I'm like, oh man, that's great. I get to play in the Big Ten. Like I really showed that I belong on that level. You know what I mean? Like guys are going to see that I can really bring it at that level. You know, I think with my brothers, they're just like, nah, you're not leaving California. So I'm like, oh my goodness. And at that time I had, like I said, Purdue, Oregon State, Texas A&M, and St. John's were the main schools that I was looking to go outside of California.
Right.
But in California, San Diego State was the other school that I really liked. Probably my second option after Purdue. You know, I take a visit there. I love it. I was like, I think we could really do something special here. The coach is telling me about, you know, this kid from like Riverside. He was like, yeah, you know, this guy, Kawhi Leonard, he's going to be a really good player. And I'm just like, okay. Like, and, you know, he's just talking about him like, you know, because I'm like, I don't know who, you know, who Kawhi is or nothing yeah. like that. But yeah. he's just saying like when I would, you know, because I would have to sit out that first year. But when he comes here and you guys are all together and Malcolm Thomas as well, who's he was like, you guys come here, like you guys are really going to have a chance to make something special. And that team went on to like a Sweet 16 or something yeah. like that. But, you know, they were just talking about the possibilities and stuff like that, having, you know, me and, you know, Kawhi on the wing and Malcolm, who I took my recruiting trip with. He was like, man, you guys could do something special here. Yeah, I came home. I told my brother, I said, man, like, that's where I want to go. That's where I want to go. I think San Diego, I love San Diego. It's my favorite city in California. And my brother was like, they heard about some like drug bust or something on the school. And I'm talking about they flipped. They was like, heck no, you ain't going there. And I was like, what? I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, that ain't got nothing to do with the basketball. He's like, oh, come on, man. He's like, that ain't the school you need to be at. I'm telling them. I'm telling them the classes they were trying to throw me in, bowling and rock climbing classes. I was like, oh, cool over there. He's like, nah.
He's they like, were not down with that. Yeah.
UC calls. So Santa Barbara, I didn't think they weren't even on my radar. And my brother, they get in contact with my brother. Actually, one of the coaches at the time is from my hometown. So he reached out to my brothers. And he was like, man, like we're trying to get in contact with Orlando, but he just will not answer our calls. Not going to no Santa Barbara.
Right.
And, you know, so that like my brothers literally picked me up from school. And, you know, they're talking, we're talking to the coaching staff and they're like, I say, man, I'll do like a unofficial or whatever, you know, they're like, nah, man, you know, please, like, we'll just do, you know, official, like, we really just want to show you a good time, like, show you just what we have to offer. And, you know, I get on campus, I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's cool. I remember, cause I'm on like, I'm low key on crutches because, I played pickup like the day before. Like it was like a really like good run. Like James Harden was up there the day and he brought some of his boys and some of my close friends from LMU were there and we're playing against them. So we're, you know, we're bumping and stuff like that. And I roll my ankle or something like that. And I get up there on the visit and, you know, I was expecting to play, couldn't play. And I'm watching these dudes. I'm like, okay, like they cool. Like, I was like, this is about to be too light. It's about to be too light. And so, you know, the coach is talking like, yeah, you'll be, you know, he was talking like how those coaches were like, yeah, you'll be a good piece here and there.
Right.
I literally walked in his office and I was like, I said, what's the scoring record? He was like, oh yeah, Al Harris. He, you know, he just finished here last year. I was like, I'll break that in three. And he kind of like sat back like, oh, wow, you're like that. I said, yeah, I'm like that. And I remember on their board, it was like, if, you know, we get Orlando, we got a chance to make it to the tournament every year and all that. And I was like, I'm about to turn this program around. And my brothers, I think I learned that confidence, you know, from them, just to walk in and kind of just be yourself. And I never like came in as like cocky, but I just knew my work. Mm-hmm. I knew my work to speak for it. So, you know, I talked to my college coach to this day, and he always brings that up. He's like, man, he's like, I've coached a lot of guys. He's like, but I never had somebody come in there and kind of just tell me like what they were going to do. He's like, you did that and more. So that was pretty special, you know, to hear and the memories that I was able to create there. Cause I actually do. I love that place now. That's definitely like my second home. So it all worked out.
Great.
Yeah, no, Santa Barbara is amazing. And Vic and I actually have spent some time up there with one of our
friends. The campus is unbelievable.
But what I wanted to go back goodness. To is
what
you called Dude. Out the scoring record. You said, I'm going to beat that. And you did.
Yeah.
So you scored in 3 years with the program, 1,825 points. You were named Big West Player of the Year as a sophomore. Mm-hmm. Had first team all Big West honors for 3 straight years, and you were the Big West tournament MVP in 2010 and 2011. What does that, all of that success mean to you now? And how is that different or the same to what it meant to you during that time when you were playing at UCSB?
You know, I think then I didn't really trip off of it too much. I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like I was, you know, MVP or, you know, all American stuff like that. I was like, those are all great accolades to have and stuff like that. But because you're kind of just, you're in the moment at that time. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, like I'm ready to keep going. I'm ready to keep playing, you know, and hooping and whatnot. Because my mindset then was like, that don't matter to me. I'm still trying to, I need to get to the league. Like that's where,
right?
You know, I'll feel like I did something. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like I look back on it now and I'm just like, man, I wish I would have just enjoyed it and a little bit more, but I look at it like that's just what made me the killer that I wanted to be. You know, I never settled. Like I never, the work was never done for me. Like I always felt like I had something more to prove. And, you know, I think that's the thing that just still to this day that keeps driving me. Like even in my business adventures, like I'm always yearning for more and trying to learn as much as I can and become the best that I can in whatever I put, you know, my foot towards. So, I look back at it now, like, man, like, you was a bad boy.
He was a bad boy. Orlando, you know? Looking back at all that, you know, Jake, so kind of eloquently put all, you know, you all your successes. Do you ever look back and say, man, I wish I went to Purdue, or I wonder what it would have been like had I went to San Diego State? Maybe my path would have been different.
Played alongside Kawhi.
Yeah. I look at it like, oh man, that would have been crazy, right? Mm-hmm. But like again, Vic, like we were saying, like you wanted to have an imprint, right? You know, I wanted to leave a legacy, you know, on a program. I want people to be able to talk about me like, damn, like, you know, it's funny when I come back and you know, they're kind of like the players look at me and they're like, wait, is that?
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, when you see like, you know, one of your favorite players is like, that's like, he really went here. Like he really did all this.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, it's cool to see them reap like the benefits now of like what my like teams were able to do, like when I was there.
Right.
And yeah, man, like I kind of look at it like, damn, that would have been cool. Like I knew some of the guys on the Purdue team too. Mm-hmm. And like later when we became, you know, pros, I would talk to them. And
right.
They were like, man, I remember a coach was telling us about you. He said, man, I got this kid in California. If we bring him here, we're going to be, you know, we're going to be a Final Four team. You know, it was just interesting to think like, you know, that what if game.
Right.
And, you know, getting a chance to play for Coach Painter and for Team USA, that was cool. Because we got actually a chance to talk about it and stuff like that. So.
I mean, I have a similar story. I think it's hilarious, but it's definitely a similar story because I would say that I'm still so happy that I went to Northwestern and still had the experience I did. Mm-hmm. But when I was in high school, right? Like I'm in high school. Mm-hmm. I'm top 30 in the country. You know, at this point, K can't nobody tell me nothing, right? You know, I'm on top of the world. I'm playing in Chicago. You know, we in the City Basketball League. You know, we killing it. You know, I'm on my team. Mm-hmm. I think from my team, 10 guys go like high D1. So, you know, I'm basically, you know, I feel like at this point, you know, for a young knucklehead kid, like you almost feel like you're at the pinnacle right now. Right. And so all these, all these schools are recruiting me. And it's funny. I specifically remember this. I forget Coach Dunleavy at Villanova. And this is before Villanova is like, you know, the consistent, steady power. You know, Villanova's always been good. They had Randy Floyd, Kyle Lowry. You know, they've always had good teams. But their recent success has definitely put them over the top of college basketball, right? And so Coach Dunleavy comes in, and, you know, he's recruiting me. He comes to a game. He's like, you know, we like you. You know, we like what you bring. But we want to redshirt you, right? We want to kind of play a different kind of basketball. We want to kind of go do small ball, right? We want to put you at the four. And this is when I'm in high school. I'm playing like the 2 through 4, right? I'm kind of just a wing in a system that just we all kind of dribble, handle, and shoot. And he tells me, you know, we want to redshirt you, get you stronger, and, you know, get you at the four. And we think you would have a lot of success if you did that. And, you know, at this point, you know, I'm getting recruited by like Wisconsin, VCU, like, you know, all these schools, you know, Stanford, like all these powerhouse schools, Michigan. And I'm like, I'm not redshirting for nobody. You know, I'm trying to, and this is right when one and done is getting attractive. I'm like, I want to, like, you know, that's my dream. Like, I want to play like with the best. Like, I want to be on the top pedestal, like playing with everybody, right? So I'm like, nah, I'm not redshirting. So he's like, all right, I'm going to come one more time, right? So he comes again. Or no. We play at a tournament in Villanova that I think them and my head coach set up. So we could see Villanova like that as like a unofficial visit, right? So we go up there and we see, you know, I meet Jay Wright, you know, and I meet the whole coaching staff. I get to sit down and talk to him. And he's like, yo, like, we want to offer you, but you're going to have to, like, I'm not going to lie to you. You're going to redshirt. And I'm like, all right, you know, let me think about it. And they're telling me, you know, we see their gym. You know, we do all this stuff. And I get home and I'm like, man, nah, like, it's not for me. Like, I don't want to redshirt, right? And then I meet the coach of Northwestern, and he kind of gives me his whole spiel, and I really, really resonates for me. The assistant coach comes in and speaks to me. He gets so moved. He comes to tears talking about it. I'm like, man, like this, like these are people I trust, right? So I go to Northwestern and end up redshirting anyway. I get hurt and end up redshirting anyway. Mm-hmm. And Villanova goes on to win 2 championships. You know, they're like the winningest program ever. The dude who replaces me is McCall Bridges. You know, it's got mad respect for him and what him and Villanova did, and my boy Jalen Brunson. So it's just funny to me how life works, right? You know, I say no to redshirting. I end up redshirting anyway. But I honestly had such a great experience. I made such great connections. You know, I met Jake through my connections at Northwestern. Mm-hmm. And it's just funny how life works, right? Like, I could have had that path, but the path that I feel like I'm on is exactly where I'm supposed to be. And hearing your story, it just seems like, you know, you went to Santa Barbara, you could have had all these other decisions, but where exactly where you chose is exactly where you were supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly, man. And I'm happy the way it turned out, for real.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, right? Leading into your NBA career, you know, it might have not been the path that you had wanted, but it was the one that you got, and you made the most of it. Mm-hmm. And you put your, you put the hard work in, and you showed yourself you can do it. And then you go on to the NBA draft and you get drafted 36th overall. What was that like? Can you talk us through that?
Yeah, tell us about draft night, man. Tell us about draft night.
Yeah, because we've talked about draft night, and it's, you know, this is a little bit different than that. So I definitely want to get your story.
Oh, man. It's like one of the most like nerve-wracking, like, my gosh, like days, like, because I remember that day there was like a football clinic in my hometown. Some of like old football pros that are from there, they would host a clinic like every summer. So they were like, hey, can you come talk, you know, to the kids or whatever before, you know, the draft tonight? And, you know, I'm going out there and I'm nervous because I know all these little kids. I've seen them all, you know, grow up and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm just kind of, explain to them my story. I'm from these same streets that y'all are from, and just kind of like letting them know, like, you know, you put the work in, man, like for real, like it can happen. And so I get to this hotel because my agent was like, do you want to fly to, you know, New York for the draft? Like, I was like, because I was already like a late first rounder to mm-hmm. early second round. So I was mm-hmm. like, I don't want to do that. I kind of want to spend it with my people at home.
Right.
And so we get a hotel in my hometown, and just sitting in there, and my agent's sitting there with me, and he's just like, you know, like they know the picks, the people that's getting picked right before. And like, it gets to like the point where I'm like, I'm thinking I'm about to get drafted. Cause I was like, oh, I killed this workout, like, for sure.
Getting right. picked.
And then, you know, you're not hearing your name. Mm-hmm. And like, so he's sending pics, and then like my brother Jamel, who's like the biggest goofball ever. And he's like giving me this look, like, you know, how you feeling? I was like, hey man, like, stop talking to me right now. Like, I'm cool. Like, I'm good. So I'm just trying to like, I'm just trying to, you know, like, you know, black out a little bit, just trying to, you yeah. know, like lock in, you know, I got all family, cousins, everybody there watching this, you know, in these rooms
right.
and stuff like this. And I'm like, oh, you telling me like I put in all this work and I ain't about to get it. So I remember I leave after like it gets to like the 29th or the, like close to the end of the first round, start, you know, crying. And my best friend's there. He was like, bro, like this ain't gonna be no different. He's like, this is your life. Like, it's always a challenge. You've always had to overcome things. And so, you know, my agent's trying to call me back. He's like, oh, come back, man. He's like, they're about to call you. And I'm thinking, okay, so I'm looking at the draft. I'm like, shoot, I was like, am I going to Golden State or is this like, is it Sac?
Yeah.
Like, Sacramento? I was like, no way. I get on the phone with Coach Vogel, and he's just like, hey, Orlando, like, we're going to draft you. We're going to trade for you with the Kings. We really like what you brought, and we think you can help. So I was like, oh, shoot. So all my family, right, the draft goes on. They think I'm going to Sacramento, and they're like, oh, what? Staying in California.
Staying in California. Yeah.
And I didn't say anything because I already knew I was going to Indiana.
Right.
But I didn't say anything. Yeah. So I just wanted to see everybody's face when they heard Indiana. And then, you know, a few minutes go by and they're like, there's been a trade. And then, like, the, you know, Pacers trade for Orlando Johnson. Everybody's like, Indiana? I was like, yeah, going to Indiana. And
were you excited about that?
Was the best thing. So excited because I knew the type of team, the culture they were building there. I was excited, man. I was going to be with some young guys out there, Paul George, Lance Stevenson, yeah. You know, and learn from vets, you know, like D West.
Yeah. George
Hill.
I
had a great teammate, Danny Granger, mm-hmm. you know, George Hill, DJ Augustine was my boy. We grew as a team, as a unit, and that was fun to be around because I really learned how to play like some really good basketball with those guys. Yeah, you know, I just wish we would have had a chance to keep that thing rolling a little longer.
Right.
But
what would you say?
It was crazy, that draft.
What would you say was the and before I ask what you learned from, you know, guys like Paul George and David West, talk to me about your workouts. Like, what did you think of the NBA workouts? What was your best? What was your worst? Let's hear some of your NBA workout stories.
Oh, man. So, let's see. I know Chicago was a monster. They would make you like play like one-on-one, full court, you know, all types of conditioning drills and shooting drills. So that was a beast. Detroit was another one that was like, it was like damn near like a conditioning workout. I was like, oh my goodness. So I'm glad I was in the shape that I was in, because I was like, these are like something else. Like, it was like picking up, you had to guard a guy one-on-one all the way down the court. If he scored, then you hit the run back down, guard the next guy one-on-one. Mm. It was just, yeah, that was tough. And then, you know, but once we got to like the plan and stuff like that, and the shooting drills, like, it was cool. Cause like, literally, I remember like during that pre-draft process, I was on a flight probably every other day.
Yep.
Like, so all the work that I put in, it was like, I'm just going to the next city to work out. And I had probably like, what, 11 workouts. Mm-hmm. My last one probably was my best one. That was with Indy.
Oh, okay.
I'm cooking. I'm cooking. And next thing you know, like, I go up and I take a jump shot. And you know, a dude, he, like, comes and puts his, like, foot under my, mm-hmm. you know, when you're coming down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You land on somebody's mm-hmm. foot. So I come down, I roll my ankle, man, and I'm done. Like, the, I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, what? And I like, I remember I'm like there, like Bird, everybody's there watching. So I'm like, I gotta keep, I'm trying to play. I'm like, I can't even get out there.
Right.
And, you know, he comes over to Larry, comes over. He's like, man, you had a hell of a workout, kid.
Wow.
And I was like, Larry Bird talking, Larry talking to me.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah. He's like, we'll be in touch. I said, oh,
that's like, surreal
like,
right there.
Gave me a good indication. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, the legend? I was like, oh, my goodness. Then, yeah, they pulled the trigger and called for me. So that was a surreal feeling, man. Like, to get a chance to see Larry Bird, you know, all the time and talk with him, you know, like actually have conversations right. and pick his brain about the game. So that was really dope.
No, I was just saying, it's crazy because I've heard some real interesting stories about Larry watching workouts. I heard Larry
can
be one of the hardest.
Larry talks greasy.
I've heard.
Like Larry don't hold nothing back. Like, let me tell you, he holds nothing back. Come in the gym, I'll shoot all y'all.
You're right.
With a can of dip.
He's talking shit to you guys before your workout.
No, before our workouts, after our workouts, with the dip in his mouth, talking about I'll bust everybody's ass. They don't matter. I was like, oh my god.
Nah, that's real deep South Indiana.
That's
right,
amazing.
There.
Still can't. Yeah, for real. I was like, oh yeah, Larry's he don't play. It was fun though. Like, he come into practice, he's like, hey, keep wearing them out. He's talking about, you know, like from the bench guys talking to about the starter. He's like, these MFers don't want to play. And I was like, oh shit. So that's how you feel? I was like, okay. So yeah, and I was dope getting a chance to work under him.
So that was all leading up to the 2012 NBA draft and the Indiana Pacers mm-hmm. traded up for you. So then once you're mm-hmm. officially a Pacer and you're now a professional basketball player, what was that mm-hmm. first year like for you? You played in 51 games and had 12 playoff appearances. Can you talk mm-hmm. us through some of those experiences, what you learned, what it was like, the challenge of becoming a pro versus playing in college, kind of all the things that you experienced that first year?
You know, that first year was a mental battle for sure. You go from being the man, you're going from being one of the best players in, you know, college basketball, best player, you know, in your conference or wherever you're at, right? And you get to the NBA and you're like, you're thinking you're going to have the same type of success. You're thinking it's like you're going to get the same type of looks and, you know, stuff like that. You come to find out real quickly, like, oh man, like this is different. Like, you can't like shoot those type of shots. You can't get that type of rhythm now. Like, it's like, oh no, like I got to come in and I got to pick guys up full court, or I got to, you know, only take these type of shots. You know, like, this is all they want me to do. And so, like, that was very tough because, you know, for the short minutes that you're getting in, you know, like, say yeah. you're only getting one or two shots, right? If you're not hitting those one or two shots, like, one, it's affecting your percentages and stuff like that. And two, it's not giving them the confidence to keep you out there and leave you out there. You know, for me, I caught a very hot stretch in the beginning of my when I started playing, like, during my rookie year. And was shooting the ball really well. And then, you know, you go through stretches where it got through, you know, you might not be hitting and you might, you know, start taking
shots. You're going
through
rookie troubles.
Might not be. Oh, yeah. So, you know, I was going through all those and, you know, trying to keep and find my way. And, you know, luckily, like I said, I just had veterans that kind of helped mold me into how to play the game of basketball, you know, because most of the times I've always been the man. And, you know, coming there, it just showed me how to become a better teammate, a better leader, you know, how to communicate better.
Sure.
And, that was a challenge more so than the physical. It was more so, I knew I could physically play, but mentally, I think I just learned and soaked up so much game that year that I think it's going to, it has benefited me in the long run.
And what was it like for you to go back and forth between the NBA and, at the time, it was the D League, but now it's the G League. And mm-hmm. I know Vic has his own experience yeah. with this and can speak to it as yeah. well. But what was that like, mm-hmm. you know, in your case?
So, yeah, like my first year, I was like, oh, man, like I want to hoop. So I'm like, can y'all like send me down there? And they're like, OK, okay. Like, yeah. So I went down there to play some games just to kind of get my rhythm, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, turned out, you know, well, like I played like two or three games and then, you know, I get a call. They're like, hey, somebody rolled, you know, somebody got injured in practice. We need you to fly here to play or to suit up. And I was like, oh, shoot. So, you know, I fly to Boston, right? Early morning flight to Boston. And then I suit up, you know, that game. I'm not sure if we're going to play or sure if I'm going to play, but we're getting blown out, something like that. And, you know, coach throws me in the whole fourth quarter. And he, like, lets me just do my thing. And I got a chance to really, like, you know, play and earn my way into some minutes. And my teammates were, you know, just proud of the way I came along. You know, the professionalism that I came with every day, the work that I put in every day. And, you know, it was showing. So from that point on, it just led to a stretch where I was in the rotation and getting significant minutes to help our team win games. So, yeah, the G League was a dope experience, man. And if people go down there with the right mindset to put in the work, knowing what they're trying to get out of it, it's a good thing to use.
I would say especially in your rookie season, what do you think really helped you, like, with your confidence as a rookie, like making those mistakes, trying to figure out like your role and your niche in the NBA?
Oh man, literally D West taking me to the side and was like, look, catch and shoot it, catch and drive, or catch and pass the ball. He's like, stop holding the ball. And I was like, in college, I kind of was like a ball stopper a little bit. So like, you know, come to me and then I kind of got get into my bag. But I was like, oh, okay. Like, so it helped me with making quicker decisions. Like,
right.
To be able to like always be engaged and stuff like that, not waiting for it. You know, like defensively, like the communication, just like the intensity, like I felt like in college, you know, I was like a really, really good scorer. So, you know, I wasn't always like demanded to guard the best player at all the time. Mm-hmm. Right. But, you know, in those crunch time situations, they're throwing me on them. But like this point, I was like, oh, I ain't really got a role like that. So it's like, I get to just kind of like let it, you know, go all out. So. Yeah. For me, I would just, you know, whatever they needed me to do. Like, it was like, shoot, you need me to guard him? You need me to box out here? You need me to wave a towel? What? You need me to call? Like,
right.
Whatever they needed me to do, that was it.
Mm.
And I was just open and willing, like, because I had teammates that cared for me and wanted to see me do well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that made me feel appreciated and just wanted to soak in all the game from these guys.
I was gonna say, what was other than that David West piece, who was your favorite vet and what kind of is a piece of advice that you'll always take with you as you kind of move forward throughout your career?
My guy, DJ Augustine. So we used to sit next to each other, like on the planes and stuff like that, and we would always be talking. He'd just be like, look, Brooke, don't let them change you. Like, be you.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, if you a scorer and that's your game, play your game. Like, don't let people come in here trying to change you and trying to tell you to do something that, you know,
right.
that you don't do well. Like, do what you do well. And so, like, I think whenever I have an AAU program,
mm-hmm.
and I always tell the kids this, you know, I'm like, hey, do what you do well. We might be telling you to do this, but like, you know what you're capable of doing.
Right.
That's what people want to see. They want to see what you can do well. Like, if you know you can't shoot, but you're a hell of a driver and can get to the basket, do that. Do it at a high clip. Like, if you know your favorite shot's a step back, shoot that.
Right.
Like, so for me, like, it was just like having that constant reminder, like, oh man, like, yeah, I can do this. Like, just do what you do well.
Sure.
Like, and it was like one of those simple like talks like that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where he could see I was getting in my head about things, you know, about like, you know, a play or something like that. Like, you know, because when you're in those limited roles, you only get a certain opportunity. And, you know, you're just like, dang, like, how can I get better? How can I, you know, fix this? And he was like, man, just kind of just control what you can. But, you know.
Well, you know, it's,
just do what you do.
You know, it's a small world because I was just on the Magic, and the vet that I guess Well, one of the best I resonated with the most was DJ Augustine. And DJ was the first person to text me and say congratulations about signing with Brisbane. And I just appreciated him the whole season, just kind of talking to me through it all.
Oh, man. D, that's my dog right there. Because I remember practices, and I'm like, yo, D, I was like, just give me the rock, dog. He was like, huh? I was like, yo, just give it to me. Like, as soon as I would hit a shot or something like that, I'm always vocal. So I'm telling, you know, the starters, I was like, I'm hot. I was like, I'm coming down shooting everything today. Yeah. And they think I'll be playing. They're laughing. And then they're like, you know, we'll play like a game to like seven. And I come down, I hit seven. They're like, oh, as I told you, I'm shooting everything. Coach over there just dying laughing. But like, he knows like I'm not playing. Cause like, I was like, I'm trying to fill it up. And I want to win. Right. I was like, I'm trying to make him better. But like I want to play,
right.
You know what I mean. So it was like always a healthy competition. Yeah, like having guys like George Hill who came from a San Antonio Spurs team, a great culture. He helped rub off with his leadership to the rest of the guys as well. So you know we just had a bunch of guys who just wanted to see each other do well and. And I think that's what made us such a strong unit. Mm-hmm. Jan Mahimi was another pivotal guy for us as well.
So how did having those vets and having those voices that were willing to help you and kind of give you shreds of information along your way, how did that help you with your journey after the Pacers? Because I know for you, you started to bounce around a lot more, going back to the D League, going overseas, kind of going back to the NBA. Kind of walk us through that and maybe how that. What you learned in that 1 year helped you.
Well, yeah, I think my first and my second year, because then the next year we had what do we have? We had C.J. Watson that came in. We had my coach, my assistant coach Brian Shaw, who was at Gaucho as well. Mm-hmm. He put me on so much game that just would talk about his championship teams with the Lakers, and I think for me it just mentally made me stronger than I probably thought I was, like just being able to endure the things, to go and be okay with the results. And I did. Let me see. After, I left Indy, went to SAC, tried the overseas thing, but my mind at that point in my career, I felt like I was giving up on where I wanted to be too early. And so I wasn't really mentally into being overseas at that point. That kind of ended that first stint in Spain. So I came home to the G League, and I kind of found the love. Love began playing in Austin, Spurs with a great group of guys. My boy Keith, my boy Moo, Bryce Cotton. We had a lot of guys, Jermichael Green, who were just dogs, and Jonathan Simmons, we had guys who wanted it every day and brought it every day. And it that's the point I was making about the D League or G League, is that if you use it for the right things. And I think that having that time down there with, those coaches as well, Earl Watts, Jason Frazier, Kim McDonald, they helped me kind of find who I wanted to be again and the player I was. Yeah, I think that helped with the resiliency of me being able to go to all these places, because I enjoy traveling. I enjoy seeing different parts of the world. And it's just been a blessing to say that I've been able to go to these places. So I look at it at that point, a lot of people are like, damn, he's been all over the place. But I was like, hey, if they're going to keep paying, I'm going to keep playing. So,
What's crazy is the G League, actually, a lot of people, for whatever reason, will look down on the G League and say it's not. The G League is actually super, super talented. And you have a players that, just haven't had the opportunity. There's a ton of talent that's in the G or D League, whatever you have played in it. You've seen it, the coaches, Nick Nurse was the head coach of the Raptors. I think it's moved up as NBA championship. Mm-hmm. And there's on every team, you have a couple of players. Or a group of players that are super talented, but I think the G League has a monumental amount of talent and is getting better and better. And I agree with you in saying that if you use it for the right reasons, it can be great.
Yeah. Yeah. And I tell a lot of guys who come out of college, I'm just like, bro, look at the G League.
Yeah.
Look, really, you never know. I had a guy that I went to, or I mean, he went to my school, Gabe Vincent, mm-hmm. Santa Barbara product. Now he's with the Miami Heat on a two-way deal. Like, he wasn't, like, well-known like that coming out of college, but he kept working, kept putting in the time. Had a hell of a year last year in the G League. Killed it. And now, look, now he's reaping all that because he put in the work and used it for the right reason.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a memory, you know, from going through all of that, from bouncing around between the NBA, the G League, and overseas? Is there something that sticks out to you about that journey? You know, you played in Russia, Spain, the Philippines, China, Lebanon, Bosnia, Taiwan, and now Australia. Is there something there that you really kind of find yourself going back to kind of remind yourself of the journey you've been on and to stay the course?
Probably some of the relationships that I was able to make along the way. Just being able to make, you know, friends, and they become, you know, like your family. Like, you stay in contact with these people, the different types of environments I was able to be put in and be involved in. That was a hell of a ride. You know, it's been like a roller coaster. It's had some highs, had some lows, but, you know, we're still here and we still get to wake up and play this game. Or, I mean, hopefully in, you know, a few more days I get to keep playing this game. But, you know, during that, you know, that whole process is just like, I still love being able to be out there on the court with my teammates and building those type of relationships. Yeah, that's where I look at it as through this journey is like, man, like, I'm just thankful I still get to keep it going and have those relationships.
So how are you looking at this latest opportunity in Australia? Are you seeing it as another opportunity to grow yourself, your relationships, and continue to do the thing that you love? Or is part of you seeing an opportunity to showcase that you still have, you know, the NBA talent left and that you have another run, you know, to come back to the States and play at that level?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this is definitely going to be a year of get back. I think the last few years I was battling injuries or coming back from an injury, you know, coming back from a ruptured patella tendon. That's tough, man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's not like an ACL or something like that. Like, your whole knee is gone and there's nothing attached there. Mm. And so for me, like, having to get that and the confidence back in that, I just felt like, even during this pandemic, that like I was able to really get some healing on that, rest as well, and also work towards, you know, building it back up to where it was previous to where, you know, I was at before injury. And honestly, I feel like I'm there and stronger than what I was. So yeah, no, it's gonna be a year where people gonna be looking like, or, you know, Orlando Johnson is back to being Orlando Johnson. So yeah, no, that's definitely in the back of my mind, is to show that I can still play this game at a very high level. And I'm excited to just be out there with our team, getting a chance to be on the floor with Vic and the rest of the guys and see what we can do. Because I think once we get out there and we get on the same page, I know mentality, what I'll be bringing every day. And from what I've heard from Vic, I know what he's going to be bringing every day. And the guys I've talked to about him, I know what he's going to bring. So, yeah, we got a lot to show this year. Yeah, I can't wait for this opportunity. Like, I'm starting to sweat.
Yeah.
How excited I am to get out there.
And I wanted to ask, you know, kind of as we finish this interview up and, you know, really enjoyed talking to you about all of this, kind of some final things to think about. And what are your goals around this, you know, your career, this game of basketball, and beyond that? What is the legacy that you want to leave behind?
Man, I think the legacy for me is that I wanted to give it everything I had. And when people look back and like Orlando, you know, what he did with his career, and they'd be like, he given so much to the game, like to the next generation coming up. I hope that I'm passing along the knowledge that I received from the coaches, the players that I've been around, to give to them, so that they can take the game even further and become the best version of themselves. Yeah, for me, when I look at it and look back, and when I decide to hang it up one day, I'll just be like, man, I gave it everything I had. I love, you know, the moments when I look back and I'm like, damn, I really didn't enjoy that, or this was crazy. But like, you know, you only get one shot at this thing, and just knowing that I've given it everything I had and maximize the most of my abilities, I can look back and be happy with that, proud of the career that I was able to have.
Yeah, man. Well, it's really an incredible story, and we are rooting for you, and I'm excited to be able to watch you and Vic play this season in Australia.
Oh yeah. Jay, we about to turn it up, dog.
I'm excited. I'm going to be watching the NBL every game. Yeah, and that's new for me.
It's going to be a fun
game. I can't wait.
So, Vic, I don't know if you have anything.
Speaking about shout out of the fucking cannon, I mean, you're talking about we've been in a hotel room 14 days. Orlando got kind of the snake eyes with the double quarantine. But, dude, I'm so excited. Man. I can't wait to finally get out and play, man. Mm-hmm. I just think, like, and I have so much motivation, especially with everything that went down to free agency. Like, I'm so motivated to go and play. I just think that this year will be special.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, I'm excited for...
Yeah,
for...
it's going to be a good one.
This podcast is presented by Bristol Studio. Sound editing by Rashad Allen. Music by James Grissom.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.